We are streaming live on Facebook on WFIU. This is Ask the Mayor. Hello, everybody. I'm Joe Wren. And once a month, we meet with Bloomington's John Hamilton. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Very good to be with you as always, Joe. Good to see you.
As always, appreciate your time. And let's just get right to it. As always, we usually start with kind of a COVID update. Health officials in Indiana, 140 new COVID cases, two deaths Monday. It's the lowest number of new reported cases since the beginning of the pandemic. Even this weekend, I was out and about, venturing out a little bit. You're seeing less masks, more signs that say masks for those not vaccinated. Where are we right now? Are we in a really good place, or is there still cause for concern?
Well, we're moving in the right direction for sure, Joe. You mentioned the cases and the deaths. The death rate is as low as it's been since over a year ago at the beginning of the pandemic in terms of a state average. That's all good. The president has urged as a target that we have 70% of adults in the country with at least one shot by July 4th. It's not clear the country's going to make that. It's pretty clear Indiana is not going to make that. We're in the bottom quarter of the states in terms of overall vaccination. So we have work to do still. But that being said, the direction of hospitalizations, the direction of deaths, the direction of cases is all positive. We've had 4 weeks with no employees testing positive, which is great. On the other hand, we just confirmed that we lost an employee. An employee died because of COVID in the last few weeks, confirmed to us. So it reminds us that it is still a disease that is really challenging. And it's really important to remember 99.5% of the people in hospitals from COVID are unvaccinated. That is, if you're vaccinated, even if you get sick, you're very, very unlikely to get very sick. But if you're unvaccinated, this disease can still take you. So it's really important, as you said, keep masking and please get vaccinated when you can.
Yeah, you were talking about vaccination rates, about 53% in Monroe County for those 12 and older county officials. And that press conference that you had on Friday say that they really want to reach 70-75% this summer. Most mayors I talked to, Bennett and Terre Haute and Lenape and Columbus, not sure they're going to reach that herd immunity, but you gave good reasons why to get vaccinated. So what's the plan to get to that benchmark?
Well, first, Joe, it's worth noting, and I want to personally and on behalf of our community, thank Indiana University and IU Health, two of our largest employers and institutions who have both taken the step to require vaccinations, particularly IU, with, of course, all the students, all the faculty, all the staff. That is a huge benefit to our community to be assured that vast majority of those folks will be vaccinated by the fall. Similarly with IU Health, the major local employer. So those are two really helpful steps to move our community toward more safety. As a city, we are not allowed to do that under the new state law. That's unfortunate. I'm not sure we would have. There are pluses and minuses, but we are not allowed to. But we continue to provide our $100 incentive to every employee who shows their vaccination card. We've gotten about 500 of them, well over 50%, which we're very pleased with because we know you're safer and our workforce is safer and our community is safer when you get vaccinated. So we're in our health system are offering $100 cash to everybody who does that. I hope everybody will just remember, this is how you keep yourself safe, your family safe, your friends and your community safe is by getting vaccinated. These are very effective, very safe, wonderful vaccines that we have the chance to use. So I hope everybody will do so.
I saw a press release just today. Today is Tuesday for those watching this at another date, but there's the recovery process too, $650,000 COVID funding for social service agencies. Do you have more information on that?
Well, Joe, this is kind of another in a series. We've done over $1 million of extra community development block grant and similar grants to the social service agencies, these heroes in the trenches who are making sure people have food and have shelter and have childcare and have healthcare and really helping people in our social safety net to make sure they do well. So we're putting another $650,000 available through the federal government, this one, and we will continue to work really closely to try to make sure people can recover. This was a really tough pandemic. We're still in it. The unemployment, the poverty, the homeless, food insecurity, all those things have been really stretched. So we're not out of the woods yet. As you all know, we don't have the jobs back that we lost. We're climbing our way out, but there's still a ways to go.
For those that like to submit a question, don't forget you can do so news@indianapublicmedia.org. You can also tweet us @AskTheMayor. Two things too, I want to make sure we get to, and we do have some questions we'll get to the end before we leave here today. We have to talk about the helicopters and we have to talk about annexation. So sure. Let's go ahead and get to those because I know there's a lot of people that have been asking us about that. And I'm sure you too as well. Last week, military helicopters performed some training exercises in Bloomington and Ellettsville, created some concerned, upset residents. So can you just walk us through, you know, why Monroe County, first of all, and what was that process that allowed that to happen? Because I feel like from what I've heard, there was some notification or maybe an asking from the military about this.
Sure. And look, I apologize if anybody was upset or alarmed or disturbed. I know there can be concern that people may project or worry what might be happening around. And I'm sorry about any anxiety about that. The quick answer of the military, this was the U.S. Army Special Forces out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina. So doing urban training and flight formation and close order work, asked us, I got communicated as the office of the mayor several months ago about doing exercises in Bloomington. And I will say, look, these men and women of the military help keep us safe. We believe deeply in training. We know how important that is for our law enforcement officers and for our military as well. And they identified that this was a good place to do a particular kind of training. And I essentially said, fine, work it out with our police department and coordinate with them. They did so. I actually, Joe, didn't know the exact night it was going to happen. I'll tell you that. But we cooperated with the military to let them do the training in an empty building that proved to be something that was useful for them. I know that four Black Hawk helicopters coming in can be noisy. I confess I didn't hear it that night, but I certainly heard about it. And there was notification made by the Army for people in the area. Off-duty police officers were used to keep the area safe and clear so that the Army could do its exercises. But I think we should have done an earlier social media notification, at least when it was going on, so people could have found out what was happening and not have to wait till the morning. So I'm sorry about that. And we'll do better if this were to happen again. I don't know that it will. But look, you know, the long and the short of it is these are our military who are protecting us and they're training, and they used a facility in our community to do so. And I'm glad they did. And everybody was safe and the training was successful so far as I know. And we're glad they're better trained and we're safer because of it.
Was there any, during the asking or the allowing of this, any money or funds exchanged?
No, there was not. Now I don't know, frankly, Joe, whether there was any off-duty security exchange of resources. I don't think so, but I'm not sure. But it was basically the military notifying us, hey, we're interested in doing these exercises in your community. And I referred them to our law enforcement to coordinate the particular events of that evening.
A couple comments I came across about the zero notice, about the Black Hawks dozen times saying they were shaking our walls, rattling the windows, explosions being set off, gunfire, saying this was disgusting. Another person and calling it an ugly look during Pride Month. Some people volunteering a licensed mental health counselor who said he wanted to help people, especially veterans with PTSD. Were you aware of how big this was going to be?
I was not, Joe. I knew that there was a coordination from the special forces, again, from Fort Bragg, and coordinating with our local law enforcement, which I guess they did a second night here in the area as well. And I, you know, I regret if anybody had ill results from this. Again, you know, our law enforcement have to train every day in volatile and difficult situations. I know the military does, and we're glad to be a partner with them to help keep those men and women safe and us. But I think it would have been advisable for us to do a quicker social media notification. And again, apologize for that, and we'll try to do better next time.
The annexation process continues. City Council presented the fiscal report since the last time we talked, mm-hmm. and you presenting the fiscal report to City Council. I did talk to some county officials in a recent report, news report that I did, and did look over, didn't read every page of the 700-page report, but did look over a lot of it. And I know there's still some unclear data for some people on the financial impact, especially to county services. I think reports that maybe some $2 million in a reduction of residential tax base. But then when you add up all the other taxes, there's excise, food and beverage, that list goes on and on. It could be more than $3.7 million. So I guess my question would be, by what means is the city now helping identify these losses for some of these taxing units?
Sure. Well, let's just take a step back. I mean, annexation is a very organic and natural process, very much legally defined, but something the city of Bloomington has done hundreds of times in our history. We have continually expanded our borders from the original several blocks downtown that were the original Bloomington. Every other piece of Bloomington has been annexed over time into Bloomington. The tricky part is we haven't annexed anything for 17 years. So there's been a buildup of developed areas that typically in our history would have been gradually incorporated into the city with little impact for each one. As an area comes into the city, some county services remain. For example, the county provides all the criminal justice services for all 150,000 of us in the county. However, the county does not provide road services to the parts of the city. They don't provide law enforcement services, either the sheriff or the police department does. The county doesn't provide parks system for inside the city. So while the county does see some reductions as they have in all the annexations, they also reductions in revenue, modest reductions, they also have reductions in services. So as the city increases territory, we pick up those services of We do, of course, the law enforcement, and we do the street sweeping and the street plowing and the street paving and the pothole fixing and the parks development and trails and economic development and all those things and recycling pickup and trash pickup and such. And so we're working very closely. I've been meeting regularly with officials from the county. I've been offering and have started meetings with the library and the township trustees and the school corporation and county officials and all. So I'm very pleased that I think we have several years to plan this. The effective date is not till 2024, if the vote happens as we expect it to in September or October. So we have plenty of time, and there's a lot of conversation going on. We've done this before. We know the drill. This is a little bigger than the average annexation because we're playing catch up. But we know how to do this, and we'll work very closely with our partners to make sure it goes smoothly.
Right, and playing bigger, playing catch-up means that instead of being incremental, like, of course, you said it should have been the last 17 years, it's kind of all happening at once. So some of these units, like the library or school, are going to have a bigger impact. But you're saying you've got 4 years to help with that.
It will. And look, I'll make a couple points. One is once we do this catch up, then we should be in good position to do incremental annexation going forward. We can't do that now because you have to be contiguous. And so as areas develop and build up right now, they're not contiguous with the city, so they can't be annexed a piece at a time. So this catch up is quite important to do. A second point I just make, besides the multi-year delay in effective date into 2024, actually the local income tax impact is staggered in even beyond that, two or three more years. So there's a lot of time for planning. There's a lot of time for collaboration. And I'm confident, like we've done it in the past, we'll be able to do this well. And I think it'll strengthen both Bloomington and the whole region by having a thriving city that can be more efficient with services and provide the two new parks that we expect to create for certain neighborhoods and the new level of services that really match the urbanized areas.
But if some of these taxing units are seeing, you know, a bigger cut, and for some, you know, maybe even the library, where we know schools are really strapped, and even if it's a $600,000, may not sound like a lot in a bigger budget, but that could be a lot of money. How can the city help that transition?
Well, I'm in conversations. I've already been in conversations with the library and the school district. I think they're very productive, positive. I know our new school superintendent has been through two much more dramatic annexation impacts in Kokomo when he was the superintendent there, and they were able to manage through it and did well, and we look forward to the same thing. We're happy to sit down and explore any approaches that make sense. Again, our job is to try to think about and look at what are the right urban boundaries. Where is the urbanized area in our community? And let's make the boundaries reflect the realities on the ground, and then we can work out the fiscal impacts and exchanging services or mutual contracts back and forth as makes sense.
Residents have August 4th, I believe, that's the public hearing. So why one and not multiple hearings or forums?
Sure. Well, just to remind people, we're actually picking up the annexation where we left off 4 years ago. We started this in 2017, and I'll just note we would be done by now if the legislature had not illegally taken action in the dark of night in the last day of a state legislative session to single out Bloomington and say, you have to stop your annexation. Ultimately, the Supreme Court of Indiana said that was unconstitutional. So we are picking back up where we left off. And that means we've had a lot of public hearings, but we'll have one more formal public hearing on August 4th, as this is all very specifically required by state law. A lot more than we're required to do by state law. We have a very robust website, and I would encourage anybody who's interested, concerned, has questions, feedback, go to the website. You can give feedback there. You can call us or email us or through the website, put questions to us, get them answered, give comments about it. City Council will have that hearing on August 4th as a formal state-required matter. And then they need to take action on each of the eight different annexation ordinances in 30 days to 60 days after that hearing. So basically in September, there will also be public votes by the City Council on what they want to do going forward.
When you mentioned, you know, picking up where we left off, was that back in 2017?
Yes.
So, and now, you know, it's 2021, people have moved, yeah. People, you know, come and go. So in some ways, yes, I guess it is picking up where you left off, but it's also kind of new to a lot of people. And some are saying that the one is just not enough. And I believe, is that going to be on Zoom or is that going to be in public?
So let me make clear, while we are picking up where we left off, we've also redone the full mailing of a significant packet to thousands and all the parcel owners, all the property owners in the proposed annexation area got a mailing in June, indicating with a lot of material in it. Again, we have every day and 24/7, there's public interaction available to anybody who's interested in talking about it. We've found, actually, Joe, that kind of one-on-one discussions seem to be more helpful to people. If they have a particular question they want to ask, they can do so. Can I, you know, what's going to happen? Can I still burn my trash or can I keep my animals? Or what about my roads? How are they going to be? All those questions we can answer as we go. And that's very difficult to do in a big public meeting for each person. So I really do encourage anybody, if they have questions or concerns, please reach out in these weeks, many weeks. And then the hearing itself on August 4th will be a combination in-person and virtual meeting. So you can either show up at City Hall in person or you can attend virtually, and either way, make comments, follow the dialogue. And then again, there's another 30 days where you can give input and reactions and suggestions until the City Council will begin voting in a 30-day window, 30 days after that hearing.
And how can people do, you mentioned the one-on-one, is that just email, the
best is phone call to our office or email. And if you go on this on the website, bloomington.in.gov/annexation, you can get lots of suggestions on how to do that. Whatever's easiest for you, phone call, email, direct through the website, or come by City Hall if you'd like.
The remonstrance period goes until January 1st, right, 2024?
Well, there's this is all very defined by state law, and I don't want to give legal advice to folks, but there's a remonstrance. A remonstrance is how individuals can protest an annexation, and state law has very specific requirements for who can do it and how you do it, and it doesn't run that long. I think the remonstrance period may be 90 days after the ordinances are passed or some period of time. I'm not sure. I shouldn't give advice. People need to look that up themselves. But the effective date of the annexation under the ordinances is January 1, 2024. Again, under state law, the services may be kind of layered in over the next year or two or three, depending upon capital requirements and others. But the legal impact begins on January 1, 2024 for whatever ordinance is passed.
And was that a date that was picked by the city?
Again, it is part of the ordinance that we propose. City Council will have to adopt it. It's very specified under state law what window you can have. It can't be longer than 3 years. We wanted to be sure this is a significant annexation that we give time for transition again and some of the issues that we talked about. So it's about a 2.5 year period or so that we'll look to work together to get that in place.
Okay. And the reason why I'm asking that where I'm going with this is that's right after what would be the 2023 municipal election. So why not move the process up before election to give those new residents, you know, one of what would be their new benefit, and that's to vote.
Sure. And I get that question. Again, if we'd not been interrupted by the state legislature, this would all be done by now and the folks would be able to vote and be able to weigh in. But because we got delayed, and because the Supreme Court didn't get an action until almost 4 years later, we really didn't have a choice, Joe. If we tried to make this effective before the election in 2023, it would really have to be effective December of 2022, which would mean really only 13 or 14 months after they were adopted. And I promise you, if we did that, we would hear a lot of people saying that's way too fast to try to manage all of these transitions of services and streets and law enforcement and all those other things, which do take time to plan and let people do plan their budgets so that they can adjust budgets over the time. So there's no perfect time. State law does not let us go longer than 3 years. So we really tried to pick the most appropriate time. We couldn't do it in the middle of an election, because you need to give time to district for it. So this really lets us redistrict, get in place, and people will be assigned to a city council member on the effective date, and will be able to have their voice heard from the beginning, and then the elections in due time.
Okay, we got a couple questions, and Wendy writes in, we active devoted citizens of Bloomington would like more respect. One step to increase this would include allowing our video facial presence during our individual public comment time on Zoom meetings. Any thoughts on that?
Well, most of that is driven by the city council rules. I do think there's an effort to manage we've had some issues with Zoom bombing and various things. I know, I don't know all the intricacies of that, but I certainly appreciate it. I do expect that most of our meetings will move to hybrid in the next few weeks, probably in July and August, you'll start to see hybrid meetings, which will allow both in-person and on-screen Zoom meetings. And I hope that'll be more accessible. Everybody had to kind of figure out how to make all this happen over the last year and a half in the pandemic. And we've learned some new things, and there were some things that were less than perfect, but I hope we found a lot of public input. People found it easier to attend public meetings from their home, rather than having to spend many hours at a city hall sitting in the audience. So I kind of guess you can kind of pick your favorite approach in the future, which one you prefer.
I need to preface this question from Steve so we know what we're talking about here. I know I attended my first city press conference and community announcement. It was the Waldron Arts Center with you. That was a big announcement where the city will renovate, open January first as an arts center and then look into building perhaps a performing arts center. So Steve wants to know, has there been or will be an RFP for the feasibility study?
So thank you, Joe. Yeah, we were very excited. We had a community group led task force of about 24 people who recommended what to do with the Waldron, the old city hall, the arts building that's been returned to city ownership. They recommended, and I followed a number of steps. As you mentioned, we're going to put about $500,000 into upgrading the Waldron so that it can open early January 2022, in just half a year, and be ready to serve for 5 years. That's kind of the window that we've outlined. We're going to be looking through a process for an RFP to find somebody to manage that building. We've got some interest already. And then we are also, as you indicated, the task force recommended, and I agreed to identify, really look at the potential for a purpose-built performing arts venue for the city. We haven't really had such a thing. Both the Waldron and the Buskirk and most other places have been kind of jury-rigged or transformed into performance space that we have used and have had fantastic use, but we do want to explore what it would mean for the community and our amazing arts colleagues and friends to have a purpose-built space. So we'll look at that. We'll identify partners, and we really don't have the process picked out yet for that.
Did that answer his question about an RFP?
Yeah, for the purpose-built space, is that what he's asking?
Yeah, for the I think it's going to be a feasibility study, right?
Well, I'm not sure I would call it a feasibility study. I think it's really an exploration of what it would mean for the community. It will probably be multi-step. Okay. I think the first step I don't know whether we'll use an RFP or not, but we'll find some partners who can help us, maybe through an RFP, maybe not, that will help us start to just look at what would it look like, what kind of size, what kind of costs, what kind of locations, what kind of interest is there from the community. And then ultimately there would be a more detailed feasibility study that would dig into much more detailed market analysis, costs, and et cetera.
Well, if you're driving around Bloomington this summer, a lot of construction, road construction projects, a portion of 7th Street is closed now. You had a ceremony to begin the 7 Line project.
I'm very excited about the 7 Line project, Joe. This is the first of four bicentennial trails that we funded in 2018. It takes a while for these to come through, but this is one of four trails we're giving to the future, if you will. And this will be an east-west protected bike lane and much enhanced pedestrian experience running from the B-line on the near west side, east through across 7th Street, through 7th Street, restructuring 7th Street, all the way to campus. Ultimately, the plan is to take it all the way to 446 and create a really terrific bike and pedestrian link running east-west through our community. And it started. It should be completed yet this year for that first segment from the B-line onto campus at Woodlawn. You can check it out now. I'm sorry, it's a little frustrating. I know there's a lot of construction going on, but I think it'll be a fantastic east-west connector to campus through the community. We appreciate your patience, and I hope you'll be pleased with the final result.
And we're getting here, just a couple minutes left. Will we see you in the, I think it's the reverse July 4th parade coming up.
I don't know yet, Joe, whether I will be there, but it's going to be a unique experience, and I encourage folks to do it. This is where the floats stay fixed and the audience moves to see the floats. This was designed a couple months ago when we still were quite unclear about the COVID protocols. So it'll be different. It'll be up in the IU Sports Complex parking lots, and I'll encourage folks to enjoy it. It'll be a little different. We'll probably go back to normal, we hope, next year. We'll hope and trust for that. But please take a look. You know, I might just plug too, it's a wonderful time to go to the Switchyard Park. There's Food Truck Fridays going on there. And you know, as we're able to get out and about and be together more, it's a really wonderful time to explore the pools or the splash pad or the music that's being played at a bunch of different city parks, and I encourage people to get out there and enjoy that.
We've got 1 minute left. Do you have any announcements or anything else you'd like to say?
Well, Joe, I would just say, the next couple of months are going to be really important budget cycle time for us. We have the American Rescue Plan, which is $22 million of one-time money for the city. There's $29 million for the county. So together, that $50 million will be appropriated over the next few weeks and months. We're digging into that. We welcome ideas about that from city council, from residents, working with our county friends. There's a lot of opportunity. I announced some intention to do some things, big things about housing affordability, arts, jobs, quality of life investments. This is a very special opportunity to try to help our community climb out of the pandemic and the recession in ways that make us more inclusive, that make us more sustainable. So I'm really excited and welcome public input about how we can do that best.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it, Mayor. And we'll see you in July, I hope.
Joe, thanks very much. Take care.
And those watching, appreciate you joining us. And again, don't forget, always taking your questions for Bloomington's mayor, Terre Haute's mayor, Columbus, down in Nashville, news@indianapublicmedia.org or at Ask the Mayor on Twitter. Have a good day. Thank you.